Welcome to another episode of This Catholic Life. Conversations about life's ups and downs, big and small, how we deal with every situation imaginable, whatever life throws at us, but still manage to be sensible, practical, and joyful. Today's show hopefully will focus on the joyful side. This is called Laughter for the Soul, a kind of a spin-off on Chicken Soup for the Soul, but this is about how laughter can actually be good for us in body and soul. About humour, comedy, and weird things that make us laugh, and where laughter fits into Catholic life. I'm your host, Peter Holmes. Today I'm joined by Renee Kohler-Ryan, my co-host and professor in philosophy at the University of Notre Dame.
Hello, Renee. Peter.
And by my co-host also, Ryan Galliott, artist, resident geek, and our co-host today.
Hello.
Before we get started, just a reminder that if you like the show, you should write us a review on iTunes, not just the star feedback, but the review itself, that the more reviews we get, the more people get to know us. So let's get into the topic. Laughter is good for the soul. It's a big claim. I wanted to start by asking what kinds of laughter there are, because there seems to be that you can laugh in a positive way and you can laugh in a negative way. That we did a show on kind of mental health and bullying. And sometimes laughter can be actually a weapon used against us, mockery, that kind of thing. But it could be an expression of joy, laughing at something amusing, or just laughing as therapy or as a coping mechanism. What kinds of laughter can we think of?
I think one can laugh just when one is delighted at something. Like,
yes.
It's like kind of like surprised delight.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was gonna say,
It's almost pure joy, isn't it?
Yeah. Laughter is one of those things. It's so physical and spiritual at the same time that it kind of comes from somewhere that's you but not you.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing.
You were going to say?
No, I was going to say the same thing. Oftentimes, I mean, I live with five kids and oftentimes I'm just surprised at what they do.
Yeah.
End up laughing.
Sometimes you kind of laughing and the child looks at you and says, "This is serious." You laugh even more because it's so serious.
Sometimes you can laugh at just how ridiculous the situation is as well. So last night I came home, I was so tired. I had so much still to do. And I was trying to, because it was the only night I was going to be home. So I was like, I'll make dinner. But everything went wrong. So stuff was falling on me. I realized I hadn't put the cord into the rice cooker, which why it wasn't working. The last time a rice cooker didn't work was because it was broken. Mm. So I was like, oh, great. And I've already put all of the stuff in and everything else. And then it just kept on going on and on and on. And then I went to put a load of wash into the dryer and I couldn't open the dryer door. And I just started laughing. I was like, all right, Lord, what are you trying to tell me here? Is there something, what is the universe up to? I don't understand.
Sometimes when we watch someone else go through a series of misfortunes, it can seem hilarious to us. Now, why is it that we find, for example, I think Woody Allen is the guy that said, tragedy is when I break a fingernail, comedy is when you fall into an open sewer and die. So this old idea that someone else, like if I watch my daughter cooking and she drops the flour on her head, she actually pulled the flour out of the cupboard, this is in an old house, and some flower fell on her head and she was covered. Just thinking about it makes me laugh. She looks around at me with this deadpan look, which was supposed to be a glare of "don't you dare laugh."
Yeah.
It just made it funnier. So, the expression of just humour in the ridiculousness of the situation.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like sometimes you don't feel like laughing when you're the one in the situation, but sometimes you just can't help but give
right.
in to the laughter.
That's right.
It was also when I found out that the most stolen item from Koorong apparently was the "What Would Jesus Do" bracelets. and I just thought that was hilarious.
That's great.
Apparently he likes bracelets. Oh, dear. I had a priest friend who used to send me memes with cars on it, and it was WWJD, but it was "What Would Jesus Drive?" Just, when people take something a little bit ridiculous and make it a bit more, it makes it more funny.
Yeah.
In terms of laughter as a coping mechanism, it seems like there's a lot of comedians who are often the very funniest people in the business. Robin Williams comes to mind. I mean, he's so funny, but he publicly and clearly struggled with mental health issues. And it seems that a high level of comedians struggle with mental health issues. And this is a coping mechanism they've used very early on. And often they have a very dark kind of background to that. And they've used humor as a coping mechanism and quite generously shared it with many other people. I wonder if there's something in humor that actually responds to suffering.
I think there's an element. There we go.
I like the elephant.
Ridiculous in the room. There it is. Don't mention it.
We weren't going to talk about it.
Yeah. I think there's an element there where when things break from the norm, there's always a capacity
right
for humor. And it's just how we take it, you know. But Robin Williams is well known for saying that, you know, it's because he understands that suffering that he doesn't want other people to...
He wants to alleviate something.
So he wants to alleviate.
Yeah. Stephen Fry is someone who's very similar in that respect. Right. As well.
Yeah. He's an incredibly intelligent person, but clearly is coping with a lot of stuff too.
Yeah.
There's interesting, a lot of these comedy things not only are, you know, promulgated by and people who are comedians are suffering from these mental distress, but people who also struggle with depression quite often look to those people as inspirations and help. It's worth mentioning that laughter therapy has become a thing recently. Now, when I looked this up, I thought surely they're joking, but here's a little brief history. A guy called Norman Cousins apparently was a political writer and developed a potentially fatal illness, and it was a lot of pain involved in it, and mostly the pain dragged it down. But he found that 10 minutes of good, solid laughter a day gave him up to two hours of pain-free sleep. Mm-hmm. And that was when all other things were considered. Now, because he published this on his own sort of, he was publishing his own journey, I think it was on a blog or something like that, but a fellow called Dr. Madan Kataria in 1995 actually released a study demonstrating that your body, insofar as the biological responses to laughter, can't tell the difference between faked and real laughter, as in it responded the same in terms of your bodily reactions to laughter. And so some of the positive benefits, such as the release of whatever chemicals released in laughter, happened. So people from that have actually developed something they call laughter yoga. Now, of all the
This is just a whole ball of wrong. Because what you're telling me here is that my body can do something without my spirit. So that's already problematic.
Excellent.
And that somehow this is good for all of me. So this is like materialism. This is not Catholic.
I'm glad you
And you just
Renee.
Said yoga, which is not Catholic.
Which is a trigger and which, thing.
Yes, it is.
We're going to have to do an episode on
Pilates,
yoga.
Pilates, yes. Yoga, no. It's so really simple.
Perhaps I should say what laughter yoga is before we go there, because it's about the least spiritual thing I've ever seen. It's basically kind of breathing and physical exercises to stimulate laughter. So they literally clap hands going ha ha ha.
So it's also unintelligent.
Unfortunately, yes. And okay. To be honest, you have to
there
get past
there is no humor in this at all.
This is what I want to get to. The actual physical action of laughter can be demonstrated to have a physiological effect which is positive, even in quite serious illnesses. However, when you attempt to isolate that from the humor itself, what's been interesting is that there's been follow-up studies, you'll be happy to know, that demonstrated that the human mind can't be fooled by false laughter. So while your body might respond in similar ways to certain activities that resemble laughter,
it only leads to cynicism.
No, your brain. If we're talking
this
about
kind of yoga, only leads to cynicism because your mind knows that you're trying to trick your whole self.
For the
it's
listener,
just not working.
Renee was using air quotes there.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Ironically.
We've talked about possibly broadcasting this in video form. Sometimes I really wish we were because the level of cynicism.
But really, how far have we come from actually understanding what comedy is then? Because comedy in the ancient and medieval and Renaissance world, comedy was the form of drama where you got this whole sense of the way that there's a cosmic order to things that needs to be constantly restored. So the Shakespearean kind of model of comedy is that everything starts really in a storm and things are all messed up. And then by the end, there's a resolution.
Right.
There's usually a marriage, and it's this restoration of the whole cosmic and also political order. So the Tempest is like that. It starts with a storm, everything just goes terribly wrong. There's all sorts of comedy and that kind of bawdiness and everything else like that. But then there's a full restoration.
Yeah.
Whereas tragedy is when everything kind of seems okay and then it just spirals out of control and everything is disordered.
Yeah.
So if you're saying that laughter can be dissociated from an actual understanding of what reality is about, I find that extremely problematic.
Yeah.
That we should not be laughing at things that are not joyful and are not just funny.
Yeah.
Because they're ridiculous or whatever.
Some of the things that we find amusing, though, I mean, there's probably time to talk about this, is some of the things we find amusing. I'm constantly surprised at what tickles my fancy. I was saying just before we came on air that one of the videos, which I know would really annoy me if it happened to me, absolutely it would be annoying, but the people who go to the beach and in those beach showers, they're in their swimming costume, so it's not at all lewd, but basically they put the shampoo on and they're washing their hair, and some trickster leans over the top when they're not looking and puts a little extra shampoo in their hair, and they're constantly trying to wash this shampoo out, and they get more and more frustrated as they get soapier and soapier.
And they're wasting water.
And they're wasting water. And their reaction, for some reason, and I know it would really annoy me if it was me, but for some reason watching their reactions nearly makes me hurt myself laughing. And it's wrong in terms of my taking amusement at someone else's discomfort, but it's hilarious. Some skits, for example, like I don't know if anyone's ever seen the Scottish elevator skit where I can't even remember the comedy duo. We'll have to put it in the show notes, but there's a comedy duo in Scotland who did a skit called the Scottish Elevator, where they get into a voice-activated elevator and it doesn't do Scottish accents. And they're trying to talk to it and it's saying, please speak your destination. And they're going, 11. And this is incredibly hilarious exchange. And when finally they've escalated, quite reasonably, you think, in the lift up to the point where they're screaming at the ceiling and, you know, screaming out Scotland and all this sort of stuff. And then the lifts open and people are so anyway, that one really takes my fancy as well. But I can't watch American comedy in general because it's almost always awkward comedy, and awkward comedy just makes me feel awkward. I can't do it. So my daughter tried to get me to watch Big Bang Theory last night. I struggled through about an episode of that and went,
See, I could see myself as one of those characters.
That's what makes me feel awkward.
That's what makes me laugh. I'm like, yeah, that's me, and that's pretty funny. I can see now why. ABC.
It's like watching the British and American versions of something.
Yeah.
Like I can watch the British shows of some things. And
The Office.
I don't like Ricky Gervais. Canadian. But I love the British panel comedy.
Oh, yeah.
So like the comedy shows like Would I Lie to You? Mock the Week. These panel shows where the comedians get together and have quite serious conversations about politics, but at the same time do it in a completely humorous way. And it really does bring out, and their sharpness of wit is in evidence there. It's quite dark because it's British and Scottish and Irish, and so it's going back and forth quite darkly, but it is actually quite incisive and cutting, and you can appreciate the wit. But in the American versions, it tends to be about awkwardness and the kind of the slightly more obvious puns. I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me, whereas my kids really love it. They really get into it. So it's intriguing what we find funny.
Well, it's interesting as well that the role that humor plays in our socialization with others.
Right.
I watch certain videos on YouTube that talk about charisma and really, you know, public speaking and things like that. And they're saying that people with quicker wit and people who are seen to be able to laugh at themselves and laugh at almost any situation are people that tend to be, others tend to gravitate towards them more.
Right.
And so a good grasp on humor, I think, not showing that they don't have to take everything seriously, but still have the capacity to take things seriously.
It's interesting you say community because one of the studies on laughter was by Bryant, and that study indicated, in fact, she was trying to say that it was an evolutionary issue, that laughter actually binds a group together. And when a group is bound together by positive experiences, they're much more likely to defend themselves. I don't like how everyone makes everything into evolutionary stuff, but basically that it actually is a kind of a social cohesion mechanism, a natural way for communities to bound together, even if they're not related, that if they share that kind of experience, they can actually become like a unit or a tribe or something like that.
Yeah. Well,
It's a big business, though. Laughter itself, or comedy, if you like, is a huge business. So I had a quick look at the top 10 earners in comedy. The top 10 list for this year, so far, Kevin Hart's at 59 million intake directly from sales from his either his shows or his CDs or whatever, that DVDs or whatever. Jerry Seinfeld's dropped from number one to number two this year to 40-something million. And Jim Gaffigan, humble Jim Gaffigan's up to 30 million for this year alone. Last year he was in just under 20 million. So, I mean, this is big business. Now, when you think they're big, and then, of course, I went, hang on, behind any performer that's making money, there's some executive somewhere making it. Well, the big names in comedy in terms of the producers, some of them are clocking, you know, $2 billion in sales this year alone. It's just an astounding industry. This seems to have bloomed. Like, when you look back at the figures, it wasn't this big 10 years ago. The comedy industry, if you like, has become a big thing. And Netflix specials and things like that have contributed to that. In another episode on mental health, we talked about laughter as a kind of a coping mechanism. Maybe the fact that mental health has degenerated so much in the last little while has influenced the fact that people turn to comedy a lot more. So what effect does social media have on laughter? Like, my kids are consistently saying lol and roffle out loud. You say something to them and they go, lol. You go, you almost laughed then. As in, it almost matched what you actually said. Why not just laugh or giggle or go, huh?
Oh, because you have to be ironic. You can't actually laugh. Right?
So you think lol is not actually lol? It's a laughter?
If you're saying lol, which is supposed to be a shorthand for not having to write laughing out loud, and is supposed to be a substitute for actual laughter, which people can't hear.
Right.
And you're saying it in conversation, surely it has to be ironic. I mean, that's something that my daughter would do to me. She'd just say lol because she knows that there are so many reasons why I think that that is wrong. You know, oh yeah, I would be laughing, Mum, but actually I'm just giving you a weird acronym that kind of means laughter but really doesn't in this otherworldly realm.
It's usually what I get when I tell a dad joke. Lol.
Yeah.
I still type ha 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 ha. I got this compliment.
I admire you for that. Thank you.
I got this compliment in high school from a friend that said, when you type your laughter, I actually hear it.
Yeah.
You in particular box, I can hear it when you laugh. And I thought, that's cool.
I like it when someone writes, wah, 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 wah. Or meh. You know, it's so much better than LOL because you're getting the kind of laughter in there as well.
Yeah. When I was gaming, when you played online war games and you played against, I think it's Thailand, I'm not sure, one of the languages in that area of Asia, the number five is pronounced ha. And so when I couldn't figure it out at one stage, why people were covering the screen with fives, like a five, 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 and you go, what? And apparently, because it's that it's a quick way of saying ha, 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 ha. So they see fives across the screen in certain, like when you're shooting someone, you get shot in the head and they'll lose fives. You go, right, okay, thanks for that. In terms of making something funny, I've seen that bleed from their social media into what they find funny. It's almost as if they're not laughing out loud until they're looking at some video on their screen or something like that. But in terms of actually what we find funny in person, there's still that discordance. Like, I found it funny. I grew up in a household where we played practical jokes on each other all the time. It was constant. And you know, I found it hilarious, for example, when you were playing practical jokes, when you're putting powder in someone's bed or you did something weird to the hat or something. Not that it was irreparable when they were about to go for a job or something, but just silly little inconvenient things. But my wife didn't find it quite so hilarious when, in our first week of marriage, I put a little glass of cold water on top of the shower that when she got into the shower, it came off the shower head and fell on her. She let me know very clearly that that she didn't share my sense of humor in that area. In fact, she made it clear using a jug. We've been very clear on that subject ever since, I'd just like to say. But it was interesting to me having to sort of align our senses of humor in such a way that it's very important, as I tell my kids now, that everybody's laughing. That you, when you think something's hilarious, it should be
that
everyone is laughing.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. There are a couple of channels on YouTube,
right,
that they've become famous and earn a lot of money just because it's the husband, the wife, or you know, the two of them pranking each other.
Right.
Through the, you know, every week you find a major prank they've done to each other, like shaved each other's hair or something.
Oh, good grief.
And I personally, I don't think I could ever be in that kind of relationship where, you know, like you don't know if what you're eating is actually safe to eat.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
But
I remember trying to put, this was the kind of house I was in, but my dad hated eating chilies and we grew them in the garden, right? So they were, we had the real, like not the frozen stuff or not the sort of dried stuff you get in the shops. I don't know if anyone's actually picked a chili off a thing. You can't even wipe your face after picking yeah. touching a chili. We would take the seeds of the chili directly from the plant while it was still there and put one seed inside a salad sandwich in a tomato of my father's sandwich, and he'd check out, because he was so suspicious, he'd check out the sandwich like, what's going on in there? But all he would see was tomato seeds and everything arranged, and then get a blast of chili. We thought that was hilarious. Clearly we grew up in a household that was constant prankery.
Yes, sadistic. I remember in high school I used to get my recess constantly taken off me by the bullies. But so one night I actually stayed up. I also grew chili trees, and I opened a pack of Oreos. I took out every single one of them and scraped out just the center of the cream.
Oh,
so
wow.
the ring, there was still a ring of cream on the outside.
Right.
And I filled it with fresh chilies.
Oh, beautiful.
And then I put everything back except for the very first one. And so when the bullies came back the next day and said, oh, those Oreos, I said, please just let me have at least one. And I ate the first one and it was fine. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. They all ran off to the bathroom with red faces and tears in their eyes. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed that.
Mm. That's a good one.
See, my mum thought that was hilarious. When we knew we were stealing the cordial from the fridge, we were sculling it directly from the bottle. She put dishwashing detergent. And she thought, oh, I've told them not to do it several times. I've smacked them and I've found them. But yeah. No, well, they're going to learn the hard way. So bloop. Which is probably poisonous in some way. But there's...
You're still here.
Yeah, we survived. There were so many bad jokes. I'm going to remember them as we go. But the whole idea about laughter, I think it's important to note that laughter is good when you're all able to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're not laughing with someone, you're probably laughing at them. Terry Pratchett, who is one of my absolute favourite authors, he's not only one of the best comedians I've ever read, and he's just got the incredibly intelligent way of analysing a situation in real life and satirising it in his books. But he's also an incredibly philosophical thinker. So he's very, very deep in the way he analyses these situations. But he made a very good point saying, laughter is a weapon. You're either using it to take down an oppressor or to poke fun at an oppressor, or you are oppressing. So it's very rare that there's somewhere in between. You're either having a go at those in power or those who are bullies, or you're taking fun at yourself in a sort of a therapeutic way or a good, healthy way, or you're oppressing someone. It was an interesting thing.
It's interesting, but it's quite utilitarian.
It is.
I actually think that laughter can just be a good in itself,
right.
and appreciation that life is good and that there are certain things that are good, and there doesn't have to be anything beyond that. So to say that it's being used as as some kind of tool, you know, with the laughter therapy yoga people, or the
you really got to think about yoga.
I do have a thing about yoga because I'm watching generations of otherwise intelligent people who having their spirituality hijacked by thinking that they're just going in for something.
So I shouldn't mention the podcast that's like philosophy and yoga.
No. Is that a real thing?
Yes.
Mike, tell me it's not for real. Traitor. No, I don't know. I'm not with Pratchett on that one.
Okay. I think you're right. I mentioned him because his view of humour is quite cynical. So he's quite a dry, dark humour. And I think that comes from his own background and his own understanding. Interestingly, he says himself, he wonders what his life would have been like had he met a decent theologian before the age of 19. Because he met philosophers who were atheist and quite cynical, and he went down that path.
Yep.
Now, some of his books are quite theological and quite deep in their reflections, and he kind of pokes fun at his own atheism, in a sense, which is something quite rare in that anyone prepared to poke fun at their own beliefs. I recommend...
Unlike Catholics, because we never make fun of ourselves.
Honestly, it's one constant joke. But you're right. There is an expression of sheer joy, an unbridled, pure nature of joy and happiness, which seems to be absent from a lot of modern ideas of humor.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to find someone who's just purely joyful in terms of comedy, like they're making a living out of comedy. I'm trying to think. Jim Gaffigan's quite clean in his humor, but he's still taking a poke at white trash, basically. He's constantly having a go at himself and his own sort of white trash, which is healthy because they're almost the only safe target in the US that's left in terms of he doesn't get into trouble. Perhaps that's a good time to mention others who have gotten into trouble. So someone like Dave Chappelle, for example, has gotten absolutely canned by the Rotten Tomatoes and the critics, everything, but his listening audience have rated him in the like 99, 100% kind of range. So everyone who listens to him loves him, or at least maybe they're reacting against the critics, but the critics are canning him because he's more or less offended, I think, everyone it's possible to offend these days. I mean, he's had a go at all kinds of communities, which would normally be, you know, you don't offend those. Mm-hmm. He's gone out for them deliberately, in a sense, as a reaction to the prior reactions to his shows. Just to be clear, I'm not advocating Dave Chappelle's humor. I find a lot of it offensive myself, but I just don't watch it if I don't like it. Like, I'm just wondering about the reaction to humor. John Cleese has made the point that humor, all humor is offensive. He thinks, now there's another one to react against, because he thinks all humor is offensive because otherwise it's not funny. He thinks if you're just pretending everything's okay. And I think he's got another problem with cynicism there.
Yeah, but I wonder what he means by offensive in that respect. I mean, I'm thinking of Fawlty Towers and Monty Python and all of this kind of thing. A lot of it is just fun.
Yeah, it's silliness though. But I mean,
yeah, silliness.
But I know Catholics who won't watch Monty Python at all because they said it's blasphemous. And I look at it and go, well, it's got God in it and he says some pretty stupid things, but every other character in the whole thing says stupid things. I mean, honestly, the Holy Handgranate of Antioch makes me wet myself as a scripture scholar when they're reading out the scriptures on how to use the Holy Handgranate of Antioch and two shall be the number of counting. I still, when someone says 1, 2, 3, I can't resist the rest of that line. I'd have to say a brief aside on this. A friend of mine told me a story about their child who went to a very, very like a priest's catechetical session. He was quite a serious priest and he was trying to show an icon of Our Lady, and Our Lady had the orb in one hand and the rod in the other. And he said, what's the orb in her hand? And the child said, is it the Holy Hand Grenade?
I bet Our Lady does have a Holy Hand Grenade too.
I nearly died laughing. I wasn't there, but when I heard of it was just hilarious because I also know this priest, and he's not a priest known for his humor in the middle of catechetical sessions. It was just hilarious to think of this child was so young and innocent. Is it the Holy Hand Grenade? Yeah. All the other kids are looking around saying, we get hand grenades? This is cool. I'm so much more interested in this catechetical lesson. Oh, dear.
But I think humor as well, I think, as you were saying, Renee, that, you know, this natural part of our life, which is joy and laughter, bringing it back to an earlier point that I made was it sort of shows a way in which we can deal with those things that are out of the norm or things that surprise us or things that we encounter in life that we can sort of react one way or another. I mean, I remember talking to my uncle in the Philippines once, and I said, look, all these friends of mine say that because I'm Filipino, I've just got very corny humor. And we're just too corny. What do you say about this? He said, well, we have to have corny. We have to be able to laugh at anything because look around you.
Yeah.
We're over 80% of our population is in the poverty line, below the poverty line. If we couldn't just laugh about things, where do you think we'd be?
Yeah, that's right.
And I think there is something to that. The ability to look at where you are and just laugh at things that come along. Yeah.
And what laughter does is that it gives perspective, I think. Really good laughter gives perspective. Like, it's not that serious. Mm. Is it Chesterton who said the good thing about angels is that they take themselves very lightly and that we should be doing that as well? You know.
Well, I mean, he also says that the good sign of a healthy religion is one that can mock itself.
Yeah.
Which is, I think that's a good thing. I mean, when people aren't open to laughing about Catholicism, and even when, I mean, I still feel hurt when I hear, and almost every comedian in the last 10 years has made a joke about priests and pedophilia or something like that. Mm. And it hurts because that's a real issue that really hurts. And I've spoken with people who've been victims, and it's not something we should just be banding around and joking. However, just like is raised by the Jay Chappelle incidents, there can't be off limits for humour, I don't think. Like John Cleese was right about this. I don't think there's a limit to where humour can go. There, if a comedian steps over the line, by all means, we should say you've stepped over the line, absolutely. But shutting them down forever after that, you know, we've almost got to test that, and we've almost got to bring it out there and really be able to laugh about it. Otherwise, I mean, when someone jokes about Nazis these days, it's off limits. What, too soon? You know, there's got to be a point at which we can have a laugh about something, so long as it's not at someone's expense. And the point about, I think, the Nazi thing is that we're most of the time that's usually at someone's expense, and there's still not the sensitivity there that should be there. But what about laughing about Catholics? Can you think of something that's actually amusing in terms of having a poke at Catholics?
Oh, there are some great Catholic jokes.
Such as?
Oh, I was just talking about one last night. I'm terrible at telling jokes, but there's someone comes and asks a Dominican, a Franciscan and a Jesuit if it's okay for them to pray a novena about whether they should buy a Ferrari or a Porsche.
Oh, dear.
So the Dominican says, well, what's a Ferrari? And the Franciscan says, well, what's a Porsche? And the Jesuit says, well, what's a novena?
Yeah, see, if we had a Jesuit friend sitting in the room with us, would he be laughing with us?
Really good Jesuits would be laughing with us. I've told that one to a Jesuit before. There are some fantastic Jesuits out there, so yes. I'm not saying, but, you know, and I'm sure there are some Dominicans who know about nice cars and fancy.
I was told that joke by a Jesuit.
Oh,
so
yeah?
At the time, it was completely appropriate because he was the one telling me.
But that's right.
Yes, it was funny that a Dominican also told me a joke about Dominicans and said a man, you know, was skydiving and got stuck up in a, as he landed, his parachute got tangled up in a tree and he was hanging from a tree. And he saw a religious brother walking through and he said, where am I? And the religious brother called up and says, you're in a tree. And he says, you must be a Dominican. He says, how did you know? He says, because everything you've told me is true and absolutely useless. Anyway, all right. In terms of laughing about Catholics, when I was a Protestant, we told a lot of jokes about Catholics, but the intention was to mock them. So, but now, it's interesting when I tell them now, I'm mocking myself, and I actually find it funny. Like, so we used to mock about Catholic aerobics, which was an attempt to mock the physical movement in the Catholic Mass. So when I was a Protestant, you sat down, you stood up for hymns, but pretty much you sat down for everything else. Whereas Catholics were always standing and kneeling and genuflecting and bowing and going up the front and, you know, turning around. There's all kinds. They basically called it Catholic aerobics.
It's the only exercise I get all week.
And look, I don't mind that, but that joke's been a very old one. The whole song Hokey Pokey is in fact a poke at Catholics because Hokey Pokey is a sort of mangling
hocus
of
pocus.
Hoc corpus meum, which is the you know, this is my body. And the whole ritual is a mockery of the Catholic Mass. You know, you do the Hokey Pokey and you turn around. It's the whole physical nature of the because most people weren't aware of what was going on up the front, and so they mocked it. Okay, but we can take that as a kind of a gentle poke at the ritual side and go, yeah, okay, fair enough. We need to explain it better. Mm. Or you can go, oh, I'm so mortally offended because now I'm sure that I've told someone that they're all going to tell their kids not to sing that song. Our kids sing the song, I'm fine with it. You know, it's just a bit of fun. Sometimes you have to make something a bit more joyful when you critique it. Like they've been doing it with nursery rhymes forever. A lot of the nursery rhymes are quite dark, but they're fun. You know, they've made it into something fun, so it's a lesson as well as that.
It's interesting. There's a movie that came out in the 90s called Dogma, which is directed by Kevin Smith, and I watched it. I thought it was pretty funny. At the very beginning, though, he put a disclaimer about the humour, at which point, I think it was that movie, he mentions, well, God obviously has a sense of humour. He created the platypus. it was interesting that I don't think he prescribes to Christianity or anything like that, but that there's that commentary at the beginning he acknowledges, and it is all meant to be humour.
Yeah. It's, I think, well, again, going back to the Simca Fisher episode, she talked about humour as being an appropriate response to the absurd. And that if something's absurd or seems to not make sense with us, we can almost, the only appropriate response is either despair or laughter. And in some cases, they're very much mixed along there. Why not laugh about things? And especially the sheer joy of laughter doesn't have to be when everything's 100% fine. Like it's often in my darkest days that I'll get home and, you know, my son will just come up to me and give me something really, really small or stupid. And I just laugh because I can't help it. It's just such a beautiful shining thing in the midst of an otherwise dark day. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. What about shared laughter as building community though? Making a deliberate attempt to hang out. Like, so I find it's different if I'm watching something myself that I find funny and I'm trying to giggle to myself and my wife tells me off for reading Pratchett. I'm not allowed to read Pratchett when I'm lying in bed with her because the whole bed shakes from my suppressed laughter quite late into the night. So I have to read Pratchett on the train or something, which makes all the other people in the train very weirded out. But when you're actually laughing with people, like you, we're watching The Good Place with a couple of my children, it's there's something really beautiful about shared laughter.
I found that as well, that in those situations when you're in a group of, with a group of people, that you tend to laugh at things more, as in it's almost like your level of humor is lowered, and you're just willing to laugh a bit more.
Yeah,
the more people there are, the more you laugh.
It's kind of you had to be there thing in some cases. If you retold the joke, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, yeah. There's a kind of contagion with laughter as well. Yeah. Like once things really start rolling,
yeah,
everything just seems funny. Yeah,
and when someone's sharp and they have a really sharp response or a really quick connection to something, sometimes it's funny just because you're appreciating the sharpness of their wit.
Yeah.
It's not actually an amusing thing in itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what the British chat shows tend to. To come up with the really quick-witted responses tend to really work. Yeah. I think there's something very healing and therapeutic about it, but also community building. Yeah, because if we're – what I've noticed about communities that are constantly serious about everything is that it's too easy to fragment.
Yeah.
The smallest thing can actually fragment. If you're capable of laughing at yourself, even at the very things that are the center of community, it gives a buffer zone, a kind of a protection zone against that kind of thing undermining the community.
Yeah.
And if you can laugh at yourself and laugh at any jibes, you're also protected a little bit from the nastiness that comes in. What about, and this is a bit more controversial, laughter in the mass? So laughing, perhaps I find myself, and this is probably tipping my hat a little bit, sometimes if something a little bit amusing or a little bit quirky happens in a mass, I'll have a quiet giggle to myself. And it's my natural reaction against something absurd or awkward. I don't see anything wrong with it, but I know people who think it's completely inappropriate. This is a deeply solemn moment and you can't be laughing. Or if I see a young child sticking their tongue out at me from three rows ahead, I can't help laughing, not out loud, but just in terms of a feeling of joy that they're there. Even someone who's, you know, slightly messes things up, like when I mess up the words of a particular part of the mass or something, I have a giggle at myself. It's just, but what about in the homily?
Yeah, I mean, some of the most memorable masses I've been to, it's because the homily was quite delightful, and it was serious, but it was able to laugh, and it brought the message across in a way that involved humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's something to it because it shows that our faith allows that part of us and it allows that in the understanding of the gospel and breaking down how we live this stuff, that humor is part of our life.
Yeah, I remember there's a homily that I remember still from when I was a kid, just because of a moment that it brought about. So the priest was making the point that people shouldn't be so obsessed about money. So he was using this rhetorical device where he just kept on saying, money, money, money. So he did this a few times, and then a kid from up the back just said, money, money, money. And everyone laughed, including the priest, and it kind of lightened the air a little bit. But it still sticks in my mind as one of these moments of everyone being together and thinking about what he was saying, and a little kid kind of picking up on this as well. So it's a nice thing.
My son... We were in a mass in a very, very small setting. I'm wondering if I can tell this story without revealing where it was. Basically, it was the current Bishop of Sydney, before he was a bishop, was leading the mass, and he is a Dominican, so he was preaching slightly longer than the average Catholic priest. And my son was sitting with us in the front row of what was effectively about a 10-seat chapel, very tightly, you know, lots of people in there, but you know, it's echoey and everything. And he was preaching. He got to about the 15-20 minute mark, and my son stood up. And it was one of those moments as a parent where you go, you know he's going to say something, and you try and reach for his mouth, but you don't quite get there in time. And he says, at the top of his voice, standing on the pew about two rows away from the pulpit, "This is boring." And we're mortified, and we've hustled him into the seat. And
the refreshing honesty of a child.
And the priest manfully struggled on. But what was even more hilarious, and it cracked me up completely, is that priest's best friend in the front row turns around to Isaac, my son, and gave him the thumbs up in full view of his friend's preaching. And the entire place is stifling laughter and the hilarious. And I can't remember the homily, but I remember that incident. Humor can also break down tense moments. So, for example, Mike was mentioning earlier about tense business meetings where a little spark of humor actually isn't that funny, but it breaks down the tension to have a laugh together. One of my wife's uncles is a psychoanalyst in South Australia, and he's telling me that frequently in situations where people have a shared tension, so like a nursing school or a boarding school or something like that, where there's an intense lead up to an exam or something, the smallest trigger, the most absurd little trigger, can start people running with a particular emotion like laughter or sometimes crying, and it's just a surge which you can't resist, and the response is so primal in its outlet that people feel great afterwards because they've let loose in this hilarious laughter. I remember in the middle of a Greek intensive, we'd gone 4.5 weeks of 9 to 5 intensive Greek and lots of homework, and we were so distressed, almost all of us were in tears with how hard it was. And then somebody, I can't even remember the joke, it wasn't that funny, but we lost it. We lost it so bad I actually pulled muscles in my stomach laughing. And it was about the relief. It was about the situation finally having a release in itself.
Oh, one of my best friends, she was a Canadian, so our producer will appreciate this. When we were in the middle of a very intense exam period in my undergraduate, she painted half of her face blue and ran down into the cafeteria and screamed, "Freedom!" And everyone burst out laughing, and I think it got us through the entire exam period.
In one particular homily, the humour is a little bit Catholic, so you kind of have to go know the Catholic traditions here to understand it. But I remember it vividly because it was one of the most traditionalist style priests who'd just been ordained, and he'd had this, like, he'd invited all of his friends and they all had to wear their most sort of posh traditionalist priest outfits.
There was lots of lace.
Yeah, and they were all wearing berettas.
Yeah,
so okay. In the mass, so there's these very fancy liturgical hats. And then he preached, but when he was preaching, the homily itself demanded, like the texts demanded, speaking about the name of God and the name of specifically Jesus Christ. And there is a formality that's required if you're wearing a liturgical hat, that whenever someone mentions the name of Jesus, they have to tip their hat. Mm. And there was a row of them, about five of them on the one side. And he the word pompous is coming up to mind. It wasn't like that. It was kind of very formally stepped up.
There was pomp and circumstance.
And he starts his homily, and that each time he just kept, because normally Catholics avoid it. They say Our Lord or something like that. But because it was a homily about the name of Jesus, he just kept dropping the name. And the priests on the side had kind of slipped into the mode of, okay, we're not doing anything now. We can kind of just relax into the homily. And they're like, and they each had to take tip the hat at the name of God. And he just kept doing it. It was, and because we could see it coming, and they eventually clued into this and they knew he was taunting them, they had to go through with it because the whole point of this mass, it was so formal and very strictly Catholic. And he wasn't being mean. He was just trolling them basically with the homily. It was completely legitimate. But I lost count at 20 times that he'd mentioned this name and then all tipping their hats. Afterwards, they were scolding him quite sternly afterwards. It was hilarious. The entire congregation, who were all quite sympathetic to the trad sort of thing, were laughing about it. Now, I didn't expect them to laugh because they're not usually known for laughing about their own liturgy, but it was just perfectly done. It was a perfect scenario.
Mm. That brings a question, though, and something that's come up in a lot of the Catholic circles, would Jesus have had a good sense of humour?
I think he did. I mean, he had nicknames for two of his disciples.
How could you be Jewish and not have a good sense of humour?
Well, I mean, he called two of his disciples the sons of thunder, which literally in Hebrew means incarnations of thunder. Mm. So he's saying, it's like my mum used to call the grumpy kids, little thunderclouds. Yeah. So when he's prepared to mock his disciples, and a couple of other times he seems to mock them. But, I mean, God's sense of humour all through the Bible, we've talked about this in past episodes, is there. Genesis 2, where God creates Adam and Eve, we see Adam brought all the animals directly after God saying, it's not good that man's alone, I will make a helper fit for him, and then brings him all the animals. And then it says, but no suitable helper for Adam was found. Like, it's all tongue-in-cheek humor, because then, you know, you have the image of Adam saying, oh no, none of these animals work for me, he better make something else, and God makes the woman. There's humor in Job, sarcastic humor, and there's humor almost all the way through the Bible. It's just, humor is definitely part of God's makeup.
I mean, what's fascinated me a lot in my art in depicting Christ is the fact that he hung out with 12 of his closest mates for 3 years, you know, camping out, you know, in the wilderness at night, taking turns watching, you know. Just imagine the conversations they would have had, the jokes. It's something that I think is quite interesting. And if he didn't have that sense of humor, would it have really
worked?
Held together as much?
How could they talk about joy in the way they did without having an example of that from Christ? How could they possibly talk about genuine, pure love for other people without having a sense of the absurdity of, you know, the situation and being able to have fun with it? Yeah, I honestly think that laughter is essential for Catholicism. Or for any human life, but I think it's actually essential to be able to laugh at things, and especially ourselves. If you take yourself far too seriously, it can actually be damaging. Yeah. One of the problems I had with Ignatian retreats is that I'm already melancholic and I'm already self-critical. And when I went on a 40-day retreat to carve myself to pieces in the Ignatian way, maybe I had a bad leader of that particular retreat, it just made me much worse. You needed to have a sense of humor about your own flaws. Otherwise, you end up, you know, just destroying yourself. And it also helps you, eases you into being able to deal with other people's flaws too, if you can have a sense of humor about it.
In the Philippines, when I grew up, priests almost always had this air about them. We had to, I think people tended to worship priests almost. Just there was, you know, it was, there's so much, they were put up on such a pedestal. And one of the things that I found that brought me closer in my faith is encountering encountering priests that could actually laugh at themselves, tell jokes and show that they were just everyday human beings.
I have a priest friend who constantly jokes about his own status as a priest as if it were, you know, he kind of says, well, you know, this is one of the graces of the sacrament. You get to discern between cheeses. He's constantly mocking this idea that priests know everything by over-exaggerating. It's quite a clever way of dealing with it. And it's worth testing these things with humor constantly, because you're right, not just in the Philippines, that we had an unrealistic view of priests.
Yeah.
In whenever you think, it's interesting, again, a Pratchett thing, if you want to know, it wasn't Pratchett. Who was it who said this? If you want to know who is oppressing you, figure out who you're not allowed to laugh at.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like something Orwell would say, but I wonder if it was.
It's not Orwell. I'm just trying to think of who it was. I'll have to find that one and put it in the show notes. But if you want to know who your oppressors are, figure out who you're not allowed to laugh at. Now, that's something that's interesting in today's society, because there are some minorities these days who you're absolutely forbidden to have a laugh at.
So apparently Catholics aren't oppressing anyone, because we're fair game.
Well, everyone's having a go at Catholics. And in a sense, it's probably a backhanded compliment, because we're the last recognisable kind of religious group in terms of standing for anything. You know, they're still mocking us. I haven't seen a lot of people mocking various other types of religions these days, possibly because they're minorities now. But the fact that Catholics are still fair game, I don't like it, because it's constantly being butt of jokes. But, you know, they're still talking about us. We have much more media coverage than anyone else because they're mocking us or deriding us. It's not a good thing, but one day, who knows? I mean, some people have actually come to Catholicism by finding out via this method that they aren't quite as bad as they said. Not being able to laugh at someone, there's a good and a bad to it. So, for example, there's a good reason why it's become taboo, for example, to mock Indigenous people. Because I remember the jokes that were told in my high school, which, by the way, I called out back then, but they were told in my high school with impunity. They were horrible. They were racist. They were worse than racist. They were treating Indigenous people as less than human and therefore should be struck off. But if someone who's Indigenous makes a joke about their own culture in their own way, it's not the same thing, I don't think. And it's interesting, in America you can find certain comedians can get away with saying things about communities. Like Chris Rock can make jokes about black people being racist. And it works in a way that there's no way any other comedian could do it who wasn't from the same community. I wonder if, you know, if that's a guide. I don't know. I mean, there are places in Australia, almost nothing you can criticise now. Mm. Like I told a couple of jokes about Catholics and everyone was fine with it. And then I told a Protestant joke and I was told it was, not appropriate. I was kind of mocking myself there.
There's a comedian on YouTube and his name is Jokoy. He's Filipino-American. And every week he does, on Thursdays, he drops a video saying, it's called Tagalog Thursdays. And he teaches one Tagalog word and
What's
gives
Tagalog,
examples.
Sorry?
Tagalog is the national language of the Philippines.
Right, okay.
And it's funny because for those of us who are Filipino, we watch that and think, oh, yeah, that does mean that's pretty funny the way he. But most of the people that laugh at it when I share it on Facebook are actually the non-Filipinos.
Oh, really?
I just think it's humorous. And, you know, it's this whole thing of, you know, well, hang on, that's absurd. The way that things are carried out. Like, for example, he shared this when someone is surprised by something, they go, ay nako, which actually is a slang for anako, which means my child. And so it's usually exasperation of like, oh, look what my child's done. But it's become this whole thing of when you're shocked or when you're exasperated, whatever, ay nako. And so he gave these examples on the video and it was quite humorous. And I'd never noticed it before he just illustrated it. Right. He showed it, you know. I think we got to remember that the importance of humor in faith, especially. I know a lot of people that are agnostic or atheist, and they are all attracted to, even if they don't listen to, the Pope, because he seems like a very joyful person to them.
Right.
His ability to laugh and to be with people.
Right.
Having that joyful attitude is something that, as we said before, is contagious, something that people want as well. I mean, if we say we're Catholic and spend the whole time moping,
right,
then it's not a very attractive thing either.
I've often wondered what people must think about communion if you've received the gift of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and yet we all walk back from communion looking like we've just sucked a lemon because we're all trying to look so deeply, you know, meditative or pious or something. Surely, in some circumstances, it's appropriate to beam with joy from having received the gift to even, I mean, I'm not talking about cartwheels in the aisle, but genuine joy and expression of like a joyful song after communion, which we often have. Mm. We just sort of, there's an assumption that seriousness equals
holiness.
Solemnity. You know, yeah. Or holiness. Yeah, no. Holy laughter, perhaps, is something we could get more of. All right, that's probably a good place to wrap it up. Holy laughter. That's it for this week's podcast. If anything in this discussion got you thinking, arguing, or hopefully laughing at your podcast device, let us know. You can subscribe to the podcast at our website, thiscatholiclife.com.au, or you can tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, what you'd like us to discuss in a future show by dropping us a line at info@thiscatholiclife.com.au. Thank you to those I've been talking to on email and on Facebook about these ideas. We are seriously considering them, putting them in the list of things to consider, and we'd love to hear from you about what you think we could talk about. You can continue the discussion, as we said, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Discord, or you can find all of the links of the things we talked about in today's show in our show notes. Be sure to write us a review on iTunes. Remember that this is a uniquely Australian Catholic podcast, and we think that's an idea worth getting behind. So now it's time for shout-outs. Box.
I want to shout out again to the creative community that I've helped to form, Praetorian Studios. We got a lot of exciting things happening. And shout out to you guys. I hope you guys are doing well. And I'll see you soon.
Awesome.
I'll do a shout out to everyone involved in the Plenary Council 2020, which is rolling along. There's a lot of hard work going into it. And not only would I like to shout out to everyone, but also to ask anyone who's listening to this podcast to pray for everyone involved.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. I'm going to shout out to my friends. There are three families which are very close to our family, and the three guys in particular, the fathers of those families who I hang out with, I don't think I spend time with these guys without laughing or coming away smiling. And that is priceless. There is no way you can buy that with money. So thank you to you guys. I'm choking up just talking about it. You are a genuine gem in my life. That's all for now. Thank you for listening to This Catholic Life.